1-4-1-9-5-1-1-0-2-5. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Celtic ease past Clyde to set up a Scottish Cup quarter-final tie at St Johnston. Rangers will meet Hearts after seeing off Hamilton, who should have had a Stonewall penalty, according to their manager. And Hibs and Inverness are also through with two of the ties set for replays next week. I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me tonight is Alex Ray and Hugh Keevans. But Hugh, it's only appropriate that before we get to any of that, we give our best wishes to Jackie McNamara, his family, at what is a difficult time.
Yeah, before we discuss football, we should discuss something that puts football into perspective. Jackie McNamara loved a battle when he was wearing Celtic's jersey. Tonight he has to show those battling instincts once again, because he lies in a hospital with a personal challenge in front of him. Now, as a father who has a child of Jackie McNamara's age, can I say that I'm thinking tonight of him and his dad. I have known Jackie McNamara Sr. for decades. He is one of football's great guys, one of life's great guys. And as a father, I understand only too well what Jackie McNamara Sr. must be going through right now. I wish father and son the very best tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I was with Jackie a few weeks ago doing some media duties, and I'd like to wish him a speedy recovery at this difficult time. My thoughts are with his family, who are obviously going through this as well. So, speedy recovery, mate.
And Jackie would have paid attention to the football and would want us to pay attention to the football. Well, we wish him all the very best. Well done to everyone who gave us goals and the best football possible in the face of Storm Ciara. And the Scottish Cup draw is one for the imagination as well. Rangers have already dropped 5 points to Hearts in the league at Tynecastle this season. On that basis, they can't take anything for granted in the quarter-finals. And if Celtic beat St Johnstone any more times at McDermott Park, they'll get them to keep. However, Neil Lennon can't be complacent when he takes his side there either. Not when there's a quadruple treble at stake.
Yeah, it was great to see some of the teams going through. Rangers, Celtic, Hibs, Hearts, St Johnstone, Cali Thistle going into the last quarter final stages. Aberdeen's woes continue, Gordon. Five games without a goal. Refereeing decisions will dominate tonight as well, and Thistle remain bottom of the league. A lot to discuss.
0141 951 1025, that is the number you need to get in touch tonight. What's on your mind after an action-packed Scottish Cup weekend? Did you make it out to a game? Did you brave the elements and go along? If so, what was it like? What did you make of it? Maybe you sat back and watched it on the television instead. That's fine. Get in touch and let us know what you thought. Who stood out for your team? Maybe from a Celtic perspective, it was a much changed team, fringe players if you like. So who took their chance and who didn't? What did you make of the guys that we don't see very often? Rangers fans, you were the early kickoff on Saturday. What did you make of that victory? Hamilton fans, maybe a bit of frustration at the refereeing decision in there as well. So give us a call. Let's do it all. 0141 951 1025. Since it's a Monday, we need some awards though. We need a goal of the weekend. No, we need a result of the weekend first.
Result of the weekend for me, I'll go Inverness Cali Thistle 1 Livy 0. Puts them into the quarterfinals against Hibs, the only side from out with the Premiership to be in the last eight. And it takes Robbo, the former ace of Hearts, to Easter Road, where, if he tells the truth, he used to go as a kid because he was a hippie.
Yeah, I went for Inverness as well. I thought it was a brilliant result, and I think it was a fitting way to win the game.
It was the only real shock we got, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the job that Robbo's doing up there, it's very difficult when you don't have the finances to compete with Dundee United, but he's doing a really good job into the quarterfinals. Well done, him.
Goal of the weekend.
Well, I said to you on Saturday afternoon on this programme, when Scott Arfield's goal hit the back of the net, I said to Gordon, just think of Monday at 6 o'clock, because I'll be saying Scott Arfield. It's Monday, it's 7 minutes past six, I'm saying Scott Arfield.
Well, I was going to go for Arfield until you took him, so I'm changing my mind. I'm going for Ross Smith from BSC. Yesterday, Hugh, I was at the game. The celebrations were magnificent. The response for the fans, over 2,000 there as well.
So just because of what it meant rather than the...
Gordon, you had to be there. You know, these guys are out there working day on day, you know, they're living. And to see him popping up with a brilliant header, it was all about the delivery. Lovely header back across goal. And it was just great. It gave him a fighting chance. Ultimately, Hibs's quality shone through, but it's a great moment for him.
I think you've both unfairly overlooked Darren Millar from Darvel Juniors at the weekend.
Oh,
he scored from his own half. Did you see it?
I've seen it, yeah.
I think you've overlooked him, but anyway. And last but not least, your howler of the weekend. That can be anything really. It can be a refereeing mistake, a sitter in front of goal, a goalkeeping error. You can think outside the box, Alex.
I'll go first. I thought it was Alan Muir's decision not to give a penalty against Conor Golson. For me, if it was any other player, you know, in the country, all the opposition fans would be crying from the rooftops. And how he doesn't give it, it's beyond me.
Sorry, going to have to be a referee jamboree tonight, because I'm going for Nick Walsh at Pittodrie. Derek McInnes is a man under severe pressure. The fans are booing him, and the fans who are booing him are getting booed by the fans who don't want the fans who are booing him to boo him. It's that kind of atmosphere at Pittodrie, and he was due a stick-on penalty, but Nick Walsh did not give it. Couple of weeks ago, stick on penalty against St Mirren at Paisley, finished goalless. These are the fine margins, and these are the fine margins that can cost people their jobs.
01419511025 is the number, at Clyde SSB for Twitter. Let's hear from you. Let's go over all the weekend's big talking points, starting with the game in Cumbernauld yesterday. It was John Kennedy on media duties. Celtic fans, let's hear from you. What did you make of it? Was it as comfortable as you expected? Who took their chance? Because there were a number of changes for Celtic. So who took their chance? Who were you excited by? Who do you want to see a bit more of? John Kennedy says it was good to show how the depth in the squad. He says it wasn't easy in the conditions and called it a professional performance.
Difficult conditions. You know, we can never take any game lightly. So it was good to get through the game. Comfortable enough for us. A lot of players got minutes that they needed it, and it gives us a chance to rest a few as well. So it was a good balance to it and a professional enough performance. Yeah, it's not easy, I think. You know, we've seen that the game earlier on TV looked tough, and then when you're out there, it's difficult. The minute the ball goes in the air, it could have went anywhere and was swirling around. But again, the boys were professional. You know, respected Clyde as best, and as we always do, any opposition. And we still put a strong enough team that they want to go and win the game, and we've done that convincingly.
It's a bit of a show of strength, isn't it? We can make half a dozen changes and it's pretty strong looking lineup, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, we're looking back, and I think it was Partick Thistle in the League Cup as well at home. Made 8 changes in that game and won 5-0. You know, came here today, you know, made 6. You know, and again, we put on a convincing performance. But that's what it's all about. We need to utilise the squad. We've got a strong squad. There's plenty of players there who train very hard every day and waiting an opportunity. And, you know, games like that provide that opportunity for some of them.
Lots of plus points for Celtic out of the day. I thought Olivier Ncham continues to impress. I thought Bayo took his goal very well. Movement in the box was very good. Ryan Christie looked sharp. And you've got to throw in a mention for the evergreen, hyperactive Scott Brown, who got his goal and didn't take the day off when much younger men were taking it off.
I think the personnel changes is allowed due to the fact that we're playing against Clyde, because when you look at the Rangers, they had to play a strong team. You look at Hibs yesterday as well, having to play a strong team. But when you look at the personnel that came in for Celtic yesterday, it's quite impressive.
01419511025 is the number Alec has dialed. What did you make of it yesterday, Alec?
First I'd like to wish Jackie all the best, and hopefully he can pull through this, and best luck to his wife and that, you know what I mean, yeah, family.
Well said, Alec.
I thought it was more like crazy golf instead of crazy football instead of crazy golf yesterday. You know, it was about passes and boys were getting putted up, and the next thing they were spinning away and whatever else. But like we say, it was a professional show. The Celtic against Scott Brown, you know, and in the middle of it. I like to look at the boy Klamala. I know he should have took his goal. You know, it's his first ball game, you know, it'll come. But I liked his runs, he looks strong, he looks fast. So I was just obviously just sat there, and I'd like to come back to another point.
I mean, obviously there's the one big moment, Alex, where he goes, it is a good run, and he goes through, he's one on one with the keeper, and he doesn't score. We're so quick to judge, but even by our own standards, surely we're not judging guys by one missed chance.
No,
I think everyone knows he should have scored.
Yeah, without doubt. I think the actual overall phase of play, James Forrest plucks it out there, and I think Alec touches on there, the weekend's games were horrendous, Gordon. The conditions were not conducive to football, so when they managed to get a kind of phase of play like that, you have to commend it. The ball through to him, the timing of it, and I think it was just begging to get wrapped into the near post, and unfortunately he's missed that. So you don't judge him on that, but your mind's eye catches the timing of the run, the weight of the pass and so forth. So you're looking at that for the positives. And you know, as he said, Alec, they were very, very comfortable under difficult circumstances, Celtic.
At the same time though, Hugh, given the way Odson Edouard is playing, given the way Lee Griffiths is playing, we might not get to see that much of Patrick Lamalle. And all goal scorers want to score every chance, so he probably is a bit frustrated that he didn't stick that one away, get his first goal, get himself up and running.
Neil Lennon's on record, Gordon, is saying that he wants to go with four strikers. Well, he's got four, and there's no doubt that Edouard is number one. No doubt for me that Griffiths is number two, and the other two, Klamala and Facun Bayo, will fight it out. But there's plenty of football to be played. I'm not suggesting that they'll start any games, Bayo or Klamala, but they might be handy to have around. As I say, I was taken by Bayo's, albeit short, appearances. Movement in the box was good, and I thought he finished it off very smartly.
Alec, you want to come back in?
Now that we're starting to get near the business end of the league now, you know, it's just a countdown of the games now. I think for Celtic, we're now approaching maybe single figures. We'll get St Johnstone in the semi-final, the Scottish Cup. Looking at how we've come back for the winter break, two up top, the football that we're playing, the interactive play between Griffiths and Edouard, the players that's coming back will look strong. You know, I'm beginning to relax a wee bit because I want to enjoy watching my team go for nine in a row. Now, this is history. You know, I wasn't born in 1967, so I don't want to be in tenderhooks. What I've witnessed for Celtic, you know, I'm like, could we dare to dream for the quadruple?
Celtic have to tick all the boxes off. They have to tick off Hearts. It's top versus bottom on Wednesday night. They have to tick off Aberdeen at Pittodrie on Sunday. Everyone knows that Aberdeen at the moment are going through the worst spell and the worst goal scoring spell for 47 years. And Celtic had it won 4-0 by half time the last time they were at Pittodrie. But they can't be complacent against Hearts, they can't be complacent against Aberdeen, and they can't be complacent against St Johnstone at McDermott Park in the quarterfinals. Even though, if you look back at Celtic's recent record against St Johnstone, you would look at it as a formality. But Neil Lennon can't behave like that.
Alec, I just love the idea that you are planning on relaxing between now and May, because I don't think anyone else will be if the rest of the season's anything to go by. Thank you to Alec in Parkhead. Let's hear again from John Kennedy. Says they'll be patient with Patrick Klamala after his first start. He says the intensity of Celtic's training is higher than he's used to.
He's obviously to still settle in, but it was a good opportunity to get him in playing. You know, he's got good speed, he's a good size, and again, he's just take time to settle in. He did fine. You know, he had probably a good chance, which, you know, another day probably he can score, but again, he just needs to take time to settle in and not put too much pressure on him. That, you know, the other guys have been terrific in terms of Edouard and Griffiths of late, and, you know, himself and Bayo are obviously fighting out that third and fourth position as it stands. And, you know, we just need to give him time to get up to speed of things. And, you know, having spoken to him, the intensity of the training and the way we work is much more intense than he's used to, you know, and then he'll get used to that as time progresses and he'll get up to the speed of the game and how quickly we play. But he'll be fine long term. You know, it's a step up in level, first and foremost, you know, and coming in here, the demands of it as well as the physicality and the speed of everything, you know, changes. So, you know, it takes a bit of time and adjustment for some players, and he's certainly one of them who, you know, certainly work very hard with, you know, but he's got the profile we hope that, you know, becomes a good player for us going forward.
John Paul is a Celtic fan on the line. What jumped out for you yesterday, John Paul?
Evening, panel. How's it going? No bad. I was thoroughly enjoyed to watch the game and see a couple of players come back in, you know, Christie. As a whole, you know what it brings to Celtic. He's been a standout performer this season, but with suspension began changing the formation yesterday, it was good to see him back in, knowing what he can do. Ellie Nussey, I thought when he came back in the cup final, you could clearly see that he was rushed, and the game went on yesterday. He had a couple of good turns, touches, reflex, getting to the byline, winners, corners, you know. I thought it was good to see him back. But it'll be a headache for Neil Lennon, but you just wonder if he's going to stick with the two up front, which would be working so great for him, and these boys come back, where do they honestly fit in a 3-5-2, you know, because you have your two wing backs and then you have your two strikers. Christie, obviously, Ryan Champ playing so well. Christy coming back into that position. You didn't really like to move and charm out, you know. That would be good for Neil Lynn to have. It'll be a really good headache, and it's good for Celtic fans.
John Paul, what position would you like to what formation would you like to actually see then? Because you've obviously gave a few scenarios there. It was obviously the one up yesterday, and obviously recent weeks it's been two up tops. What would you like to see going forward?
I really, really like the 3-5-2. I think it's been working. I think it's been working for Celtic. And now I know in bigger games, whether Europe, yeah, I bought away Aberdeen a few. It's a big 5 weeks coming up for Celtic, you know. And I just hope Neil Lynn is 63-5-2. I really, really think that Griffiths and Edward have been thriving off it, you know. But as I say, the players coming back in and sitting on the bench, they're talking they would walk into, well, they would walk into another team in Scotland, you know. And it's good to have.
So, yeah, I mean, if that's the case, Alex, if it was to be 3-5-2, does Il-Yunusi fit into that or not? Not really.
I don't think he fits into being a left wing back. That would be a step too far for me, you know, because I asked him to do the defensive side. I think James Forrest is more attuned to, he's played it there in various occasions over the last few years. So for me, they two are more effective further up. But if you're actually sacrificing that because of the good work that they're doing with Griffiths and Edward, only Neil Lennon will know. He will analyse the opposition, see where they can get the weaknesses, and if that system fits into the opposition.
I was just going to say, just on that, one more point on it, would you expect it to continue to chop and change then? Because
I think it'll be horses for courses,
surely players like Il-Yunusi, and I don't mean just him, surely players like him are good enough to get in the team. But ultimately, if you think the other formation is better, it's almost like, you know, what comes first is, do the players dictate the formation, or does the formation dictate the players?
Well, I think the big question would be Neil Lennon would be able to answer that, Gordon, in terms of what he sees against the opposition. I think against the smaller teams, he'd most certainly feel as if they can overwhelm. They've so much of the ball, and you know, it's wave after wave after wave. Whereas if you're going to like Ibrox, if you're going to Pittodrie, I think it's a different ball game. Here, you're asking guys to play out of position, probably a wee bit more defending to do it. I'm not sure they'd maybe do it there.
Neil Lennon said that the understanding between Lee Griffiths and Odson Edouard was telepathic, and you know, Griffiths is now adding a fresh dimension. Edouard looks all the better for it himself. So for me, they go with those two up front on an innocent until proved guilty basis. They're there until he, the manager, no longer thinks it's working.
Right, it got kicked off on Saturday afternoon. Thank you to John Paul, by the way. The lunchtime game between Hamilton Accies and Rangers, that's when we got off and running. It was, in the end, a comfortable outcome for Rangers. A few ropey moments within that, and of course a big penalty call that Brian Rice wasn't happy with. So we're going to look back on the game in South Lanarkshire next. Let us know what you made of it. 01419511025. We'll hear from Stephen Gerrard and Brian Rice after the travel with Stephen.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Road Accident Solicitors. The compensation you deserve when you've been sidelined. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Alex Ray and Hugh Keevans are here, looking back on all the big weekend's talking points from the Scottish Cup. So get in touch, let us know what you made of it. 01419511025 at Clyde SSB on Twitter as well. We started with yesterday's action at Broadwood. Let's go back a bit further to the Foy Stadium on Saturday lunchtime. Stephen Gerrard says Rangers had defensive issues against Hamilton and the game should have been more comfortable, but he was happy with how clinical they were at the end of the game. What did you think? Give us a call right now.
Yeah, it is job done. Obviously, we finished the game off extremely well by being clinical in front of goal, so that was very pleasing. We had a few issues in the first half defensively that we needed to iron out at half time. Once we did that, I thought we were very comfortable within the game, but Hamilton caused us some problems in the first half because defensively we weren't at it. You know, we pride ourselves on our organisation and our shape, and I don't think defensively we were on the same page at times. Obviously they've had another decent chance besides the goal, but for me, I thought we should have been better defensively. If we was, we could have been a lot more comfortable at half time, and I wanted the luxury today to try and get the game finished as quick as we can. Unfortunately, didn't have that luxury. Credit to Hamilton, the way they played first half. Second half, we've controlled everything and scored some really, really good, strong goals.
Yeah. Again, lots of positives for Rangers out of that day. Yes, they got a lucky break when Hamilton were not awarded the penalty they should have been, but Arfield's goal scoring, terrific. Aribo's goal, I thought, was a beauty as well. Well constructed, beautifully finished, and Morelos gets a goal, which in the middle of a controversial time for him, that was a good thing for his temperament. So all in all, good day for Steven Gerrard. Nothing to be picky about, really. And like Celtic, he now has to tick off the games, beginning at Kilmarnock on Wednesday night, where of course Rangers have come to grief before.
Yep, I agree with his assessment there, Steven Gerrard, particularly the first half. You, I thought defensively they were a wee bit sixes and sevens. They were all over the place, Gordon, you know, when Golson was trying to drop off, you know, Edmondson's trying to step up on the halfway line, leaving the whole pitch wide open. I thought Barisic was a wee bit too advanced at times as well. So I think if you're looking for a back line, I thought they were kind of a wee bit kind of all over the place in the first half. And he's right in what he says in terms of the goals. I think one of the big talking points will most certainly be Golson's handball, you know, that wasn't given at a crucial time in the game. But, you know, you look at it overall, I agree with you. I think Morelos as well, I think that was an important goal for him, purely because he wants to get back up and running in 2020 for his 30th goal of the season.
Rangers fans, Hamilton fans, this is the perfect time to let us know what you made of it. 01419511025. What about Yanis Hadji? Is he continuing to impress? Yeah. Alex, he clearly got a bit quieter as the game went on, and probably should have scored early, but are we still seeing enough of what he can bring?
Gordon, I've seen him a couple of times now. That's two games in the bounce I've actually saw him. He is technically very good. He is very strong with both feet. Normally you kind of see a guy strong and not bad with other one. This guy's good. Good awareness, a couple of movements with Alfredo Morelos. But the one thing I can say about this guy is he will score goals. The reason being is he always takes up areas where he looks as if he's going to score goals. I've seen him, as I said, a couple of times, and it looks as if he could have scored about four or five. So, you know, he will pitch in.
You need to be careful with Hadji and with those like Klamala who are just into the country. There's some daft talk. You know, Hadji was here for a matter of days, and reports from abroad talking about he'll go for 100 million euros. I mean, come on, let him get in here. He looks a very talented player, and I'm sure that Steven Gerrard is now, even now, very early on, very happy to have him.
Well, Brian Rice says even Rangers coach Michael Beale told him on Saturday that Hamilton were denied a Stonewall penalty. He says the ref had a clear view of the ball hitting Conor Goldson's arm, and that he doesn't think the rule is interpreted the same way for each club.
When you play the Old Firm, you need to take your chances, you need to carry luck, and you need to get some big decisions. We got three injuries on Saturday, we scored a good goal, and we didn't get a couple of the big decisions. That's all. I'm not getting into any trouble with saying anything. Michael Beale said to me at half-time, that's a Stonewall penalty, I've seen it. How do you not get it? Well, we never saw. That's just the way it's been going. That's the last few weeks we've had a couple of things go against us. I says to the lads, you know, you need to use that as a motivation. You know, we've had a couple of decisions in the big games against Celtic, against Rangers. Now, if we'd have got a penalty, if, we might have missed it. We might have scored. So nobody knows. You know, it's. But I'm disappointed because the referee has a clear view of it. I've seen it, and the linesman's got a really clear view of it, and it's just something that's just went against us. How do we help them? Get better referees, get better assistants. I need to keep looking for better players. Clubs need to keep looking for better coaches. We just need to try and get better. Everybody needs to get better.
Talking generally about that role is well enough understood by clubs, by referees, and that it's been interpreted consistently across the games.
That's a good question. I don't think it's been interpreted the same for every club.
You just can't say that. I'm sorry, you just can't say that. That's an allegation of favouritism. Derek McInnes is at a big club, and a big club that's struggling, and he used to have got a penalty at the weekend, but the referee missed it. And Celtic, when they went to Fir Hill in the last round of the Scottish Cup, should have had a penalty, but didn't get it. The referee missed it. It's inefficiency, but it's not cheating. And you just can't say that, Brian.
Alex, usually there's a bit of a debate to be had over these things. Yeah. Actually, there's not really, I don't think. I think even most Rangers fans who tweeted in at the weekend, certainly, forgive me if I'm misrepresenting you, feel free to argue back. But I think everyone accepts the referee's missed one there.
Oh, there's no two ways about it, Gordon. You can actually see the way the ball lands. You're thinking, how did it actually die a death? It clearly struck his arm, which was outstretched. So, you know, under the interpretation, this silhouette. Gordon, it fascinates me, because I'm crystal clear that it's a penalty. But, you know, when you say, you're trying to make your body bigger, when you're going to ground, you naturally try and put your arms down. But it's still big. But you
actually, see, there is a distinction.
Can you
there.
Tell me about this? Because so, I was looking at this.
For one of them, if you get to the byline, and I slide to try and block it,
yes,
and my arm is
trailing,
propping me up.
Yep.
If the arm is going down towards the ground to sort of hold me up, that's fine. But this was different. I mean, Conor Gouldson's arm was sort of stretched out straight in front of him as he leans down. So they are a bit different. Had he slid along the ground, and you know, you see
I've seen
it, quite
it last weekend, Gordon, where I saw it, and it's a trailing one and it catches his arm.
If your arm goes down the way to hold you up, so to speak, on the ground and it hits your arm, that shouldn't be a penalty. But this one's different because Goldson's standing upright and his arm goes out in front. Anyway, let's take another call from Andy in Finnissin. Hi, Andy.
How's it doing? All right.
Not bad, Andy. What's on your mind tonight?
The first thing I wanted to say was about Jackie McNamara. I'm through the same thing myself about 15 years ago. I had blood and then I managed to get through it. And I'm just back to my usual daft self again, but I hope it gets better.
Yeah, well said, Andy. I think everyone's wishing him all the best, so thanks for taking the time to say that.
Hi. I was listening to just at the game, the Rangers game, you know, the first, especially the first half of it, the defence, you know, we did look a bit shaky, and I kept going, we need to do something, get better. And then the other point was, he with that wind, I looked at Tavernier and Barrage came down the wing, putting the big eyeballs, and I kept screaming to tell him, I said, just put a nice wee low one in, past. And that's what we Ryan Kent done for Aribo. What a goal, you know what I mean? I just think about relying too much, and especially on that kind of weather, you know, the high ball in, which is fine when the weather's nice, but in that wind, you're going, no, just keep the ball off, put it in fast, and well, that's what they've done. So I was quite delighted with that, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the key things is for Steven Gerrard to get his back line first and foremost sorted, whether he goes with Edmondson again or Katic. You know, I think Katic was doing okay. I thought he struck up a decent partnership with Goulson. On an offensive point of view, I thought Rangers were very, very wasteful up until the Kent cross, which you put on a plate for Aribo to score a fine goal. But in the main, I thought when he got into the, but I can't emphasise the actual conditions as well. You know, it's very easy, you know, if you watch games throughout the weekend where people were in very good positions, the ball was going all over the place. You think it's going round the face, all of a sudden it catches a gust, it's going up in the air, balls were dropping because it was catching the wind. So I think there's mitigating circumstances due to the fact of the lack of quality of the weekend.
Andy's right though, Hugh. We sat, to be correct, stood and watched it, and Rangers seemed to be getting down the side over and over again. The quality of the delivery wasn't there, and then all of a sudden Ryan Kent finds one right on the money along the ground. A terrific finish from Joe Rebo, and that really flipped the game. Rangers then go on to win convincingly in a game which, you know, I wouldn't say they struggled as such, but there were clearly some sticky moments throughout.
Tavernier was particularly guilty. Final ball was not good enough. However, I think you do have to make allowances this weekend for the kind of weather that was going on there. And Kent, the pass to Aribo and the execution, first class. But I am willing to make allowances, whether it's for Rangers, Celtic, Aberdeen, whoever, because that was a truly exceptional weekend weather-wise.
Andy, the only other sort of talking point, if you like, or debating point amongst the Rangers starting 11 at the moment is the fact that Yanis Hadji's come to the club. He's come in, scored the winner against Hibs. What was it? It was against Hibs. We're just taking a mental block.
The winning goal
Hibs,
against Hibs.
Just the way you looked at me there, I thought.
No, I was actually looking at Rory McIlroy's unbelievable shot on the TV.
Oh, you're distracted. I'll just turn that off in a second. Andy, what about him? He gets, you know, kept his place in the starting 11 at the weekend. Are you happy with what you're seeing?
The boy looks good. I think he'll take a wee while to settle right down to, you know, what he can do. But the boy does look, he's got talent. He's no frightened to take the ball. Reading the evening, you know, he's got men in him. The boy does look, I said, he'll probably just take a wee while to adjust. I know he scored a goal and he's debut and that, but you know, something people expect or that's him. But he's just, blend him in nice and easy, take your time with him, you know, and hopefully he will come good for us.
Just before we let you go, Andy, we've not really had the chance to look forward yet. What about that cup draw? I mean, Hearts, if you were to base this purely on the league table, you would say, all right, that's a good draw for Rangers, we'll take that. However, the last two visits to Tynecastle have not gone to plan. Is that a draw that fills you with a bit of concern, or are you confident?
No, a wee bit of concern, because I said, I was confident last time we played Hearts and then goes what happened, you know what I mean? No, we need to really up our game. The Rangers need to start, hopefully, Morelos now, you get that goal. We really need to start up the game like we did before the winter break, because that winter break just seemed to kill us. I'd just take my soul coach for next year. Goodbye.
That's where you would.
You know, it makes an interesting point there, Gordon, in terms of the one thing you know about going to Tynecastle. You know you're in for a battle here. You need to roll up your sleeves. They've got personnel. You know, you look at Boyce and Naismith, you know they two are going to rattle you, get in about you.
It's so strange though, isn't it? You and I spoke about this a few times. We really thought they would kick on after the Rangers game, yeah. And they got through in the cup, but still not really managing to kick on.
No, absolutely, Gordon. They still look to be stuttering a little bit. And you know, I think it's easy. We often said this. Do you
are
remember
you
we
sure?
Stood, we stood here with Craig Beattie that day, Hugh, and then the following Saturday, you know, we were talking about it, and it says it's easy to get up for the Old Firm game. It's the bread and butter, the ones round about that you need to win.
Has he put the system, Daniel Stendel, before the personnel?
No. Because I think when you look at their actual, you get rid of the ones that were a bit slower within the squad. And what he's done now is, Hugh, he's obviously got Suter playing at the back. He's also got Halkett, who are not bad. They're mobile. So when they are pressing high up, it allows them to recover for anyone. But
they shed an awful lot of goals. And, you know, again, I'm making allowances, not excuses. But in the awful weather at Falkirk on Saturday night, Falkirk hit the bar three times. He was lucky to get out of there.
You think they hit the bar three times. It was difficult to tell with the amount of rain on the camera lens. You think they hit the bar three times.
I wear specs, I'm used to that.
Was that your vision coming down Kilbabby Road to get here this afternoon?
Absolutely normal for me.
Okay, Andy and Finnison, thank you very much. We're going to get some travel with Stephen. Then we'll hear from Stephen Gerrard on Alfredo Morelos. It's a great time for you to get in touch. 01419511025.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the league leader for compensation. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans is here, Alex Ray is alongside him. We're looking back on some of the weekend's biggest talking points across the Scottish Cup. We'd love to hear from you on the phones, 01419511025. And if you would rather tweet, you can find us at ClydeSSB. We've got big midweek fixtures as well. All of a sudden, Hugh, it seems like we're just getting over one set of games and another set rears their head. So what to look forward to this week?
Yeah, midweek Celtic Hearts, top versus bottom. Every game an adventure under Daniel Stendel. Can't quite work out Hearts. You know, one minute they're beating Rangers, next minute they're struggling. It would appear that the players are struggling at times to cope with the system and Daniel Stendel's demands, but they'll go to Celtic, and with Liam Boyce and Stephen Naismith, they'll believe they have a chance. Rangers at Kilmarnock, where everyone keeps bringing up what happened just over a year ago after the winter break. Rangers went there full of optimism and lost the match 2-1 and were never the same in the league, and Celtic won 8 in a row. So big matches for the pair of them on Wednesday night.
And what about this Scottish Cup draw as well, Alex? We've fleetingly touched on it in terms of, in relation to the games that have gone at the weekend. Obviously in this city there's always that intrigue. Would Celtic or Rangers be drawn together? Would be kept apart? They were kept apart. What did you make of it? What else stands out?
I think Inverness, I think they will look at Hibs and think they may well have an opportunity to get to the semi-finals. Jack Ross will think it's probably the easiest tie that they could get against Cali Thistle as well. I think Celtic will go up and take care of St Johnstone. It's how Rangers go about their business, Gordon, having dropped points twice now at Tynecastle. I think that's the draw of the quarterfinals, you know. And then you've got the other ones, Kilmarnock.
Yeah, St Mirren or Motherwell versus Aberdeen or Killy.
Yeah, a very good, finely balanced one as well. I think either one of the managers will expect to go through that tie as well.
Brian is a Celtic fan on the line. What are you concerned with tonight, Brian? What's on your mind?
Well, it's not so much a concern. It's more of what Hugh was talking about earlier on. I mean, players coming in. I'm a Celtic fan, as you know. I was there at Clyde on Sunday, and it was a very, very, very terrible conditions to play football in. But we were all dressed in, I'm sure, I don't know if Hugh was there or if the lads were there. We were all dressed in our jackets and, you know, like, scarves, hats, badges, whatever. These guys are going out there with T-shirts and shorts on. No, so don't give them that credit. And that's both teams. What I was listening to at the beginning of the show, and Hugh was talking about players taking or given, being given days off, you know, more experienced players and fringe players. Scott Brown won't take a day off ever. He won't take a day off. And I know that for a fact. I've been in company that spoke to people and spoke to Scott. Scott Brown does not want to take days off. He likes to drive forward. He likes to show by example. I've seen him in Russia walking through 0, I think, 7 minus 7 degrees, and he was wearing shorts and t-shirt to walk into the hotel. My point is that you know, these guys are professional. These guys are working hard. Scott Brown, for me, how in God's earth are we going to ever replace him when Father Time catches up to him? And he's the only one that will break him down. He's the only one. Scott Brown will go and go and go until he can't go, you know. The other point that I was going to make, and it kind of connects, is Scotland and the authorities that run this game must do something about this whole plastic pitch carry-on. We have conditions that are akin to, you know, like winter conditions where, but we can have groundsmen who can work on grass and move on grass and make grass good. The modern day grasses that we can get on, and I know that the cost will be greater, but these parks are going to cause serious injury to someone.
Very simple response, Brian.
Also, just on that accusation, and I'm not for a second saying you're wrong, because loads of pros would agree with you, Brian, but the evidence is still lacking about the direct correlation with injuries. That's the problem. The players don't like it. That's important, because PFA Scotland will tell you that. So maybe we should listen to the players. Lots of fans don't like it as well. But that direct correlation between, you know, to get proof of increased chance of injury is still lacking.
But anyway, the first thing you have to do is, if teams don't like it and want them removed and want teams who have them to be refused entry to the top flight, do something about it. Make your case, get together, approach the SFA, the SPFL, but you have to do something, just talk.
It's also the type of thing we could spend multiple shows on. So just so that Brian can get both points answered, let's keep his body temperature to one side and focus more on the football for Scott Brown. Yeah, I know, it's good on him for being able to wear a t-shirt in the cold. It certainly wouldn't be me. But I'm sure for Neil Lennon, the standout thing would be, Alex, 43 appearances by the 9th of January for a guy that we were told, or people thought was going to be managed. Is that the phrase they use these days? 43 appearances by the 9th of February.
It's a remarkable return so far, Gordon. I think one of the things you can actually label at Scott Brown is that he wants to play every single game. He wants to be up front and centre. He wants to drive the team forward. And we were touching on this prior to coming on the show about in terms of the personnel he has round about him. I reckon he could play for another couple of years easy. 2, 3, 4 years, because when you look at the guys either side to you, he has tons and tons of legs. There's runners all over the place, and he's experienced, and he doesn't look as if he's wearing physically himself. So he is a few years.
Scott sends himself up. He sends himself up. Plays the part of the big daft boy from Fife, but he does know he'll be 35 in the summer, and he does know that it won't last forever, and that's why I think he wants to play every game, in every competition, in all weathers, because he will miss this game like nobody's business when Father Time finally does tell him to call it a day. So he is irreplaceable, and where Celtic get Scott Brown Mark II, I do not know.
Thank you to Brian and Stirling. Let's hear a bit from Steven Gerrard. He hopes Alfredo Morelos' goal on Saturday will send him back to being in top form. He says the striker has missed chances in recent games that he'd normally score, but believes he's on his way back to his best.
I think he looks sharp today. I think he'll be disappointed that he never scored in the first half. I thought that was a real good chance for someone like Alfredo. So he's probably slightly disappointed he hasn't scored a couple today. But there was still part of his play that was typical Alfredo, where he's undefendable. He's really strong and powerful. He ran through the defender and won the penalty, which is obviously the breakthrough we were looking for. And then again, he's in the right place at the right time, and he still had to do a little bit with the header. It was a deflective cross. There wasn't much pace on it, so he showed the power in his neck muscles to guide that on. Hopefully that goal will spring him into more now, because we need him firing as quick as possible.
You think you needed that goal just to get it?
Yeah, possibly. I think all forwards, especially number nines, you know, they thrive on goals, and they get confidence and belief from goals. He had a wonderful chance for us against Aberdeen that he normally takes, which cost us a bit. And today, first half again, it was a similar chance where he's in on goal and you'd expect the net to go, but hopefully that header will spring him into more goals. But he's definitely getting in the right places.
Some news, Hugh, going back to December 29th today, and that's that a 12-year-old boy has been charged in relation to alleged racist chants directed at a Rangers player in the game against Celtic at Celtic Park on the 29th. So police have issued this statement today, reminding the public as well, as the person charged is below the age of 18, he can't be named or identified for legal reasons. And those legal reasons are also what don't really allow this to become a big phone-in discussion, if you like.
No.
A 12-year-old boy has been charged. Criminal proceedings are active, and therefore we simply cannot speculate or debate it.
Yeah,
we can speak in general terms, of course.
Fans, and it's no fault of theirs, but fans don't understand the law as it applies to newspapers, radio and television. It's not their business to understand it, but it's our business to say that because action has been taken by Police Scotland today, we cannot interfere with the process. In general terms, and with no direct reference to what happened today, racism in football and in everyday life is abhorrent. There's no one in here who is going to contradict that statement. It is abhorrent. We don't want it in football. We don't want sectarianism in football. But we cannot refer anymore to what happened today because the legal process has to be respected. A couple of weeks ago, there was a case involving Shea Logan, the Aberdeen fullback, and he spoke to the family of the boy concerned in that matter. And that boy has learned a harsh lesson. His family were mortified. They have learned a harsh lesson, and he will not do that again. But I repeat, finally, racism is abhorrent.
Let's leave that one there for now.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
What a way to kick off a week by winning Beat the Pundit. The weather's miserable, you get the signed ball to cheer you up if you beat Alex Ray or Hugh Keevans by getting more questions right. You have to call us now and before 7 o'clock though, 0141 951 1025.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the form team for compensation for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans and Alex Ray here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Brian Rice, the Hamilton boss, has been speaking today. He believes more needs to be done to stop games going ahead in extremely windy conditions. Food for thought, Hugh. I'm just going to leave that dangling there. I wonder if you were out at a game at the weekend, or if you watched it on the TV, do we sometimes overlook the impact that wind can have in a game? We get obsessed about waterlogged pitches and all the rest of it. Is wind maybe worse than the lot? You tell us. 0141 951 1025. We'll dig into that after this, Hugh.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
The first Beat the Pundit of the new week. It's a clean slate for listeners and pundits alike. And Kevin in Bargeddy is going to kick things off for the listeners this week. How are you, Kevin?
I'm very well. How's yourself?
Not too bad at all, Kevin. A Celtic fan, happy with the job done yesterday?
Yeah, absolutely. Difficult conditions, but I go over the line, that's all that matters.
Absolutely. Difficult conditions indeed. We'll hear from Brian Rice on that in just a second. Let's find out who you're up against, though, Kevin. If it's heads, it'll be Hugh. And if it's tails, it'll be Alex Ray. And it is heads. Hugh Keevans against Kevin from Bargeddy. Is that good news?
I was hoping for Alex.
It's always next week when you've been shot, takes you down.
Let's give Hugh something else to listen to. That way he can't hear us anymore, Kevin. Right, here's the deal. If you've never heard it before, you've got 30 seconds head to head with Hugh. You can pass. So if you don't know it, pass it quickly and move on to the next one, okay?
Yeah.
Good man. Let's get stuck in. Your time starts now. Who scored a hat-trick for Hibs against BSC Glasgow?
Deutsch.
Who's the only non-premiership team left in the Scottish Cup?
Inverness.
What country does Scott Arfield represent?
Canada.
What term was used to describe the rivalry between Dundee United and Aberdeen in the 80s?
The new sun.
Which Rangers player is currently on loan at St Johnston?
Middleton.
Who's got the most premiership clean sheets apart from McGregor and Forster?
Joe Lewis.
Where did John Souter start his career?
Dundee United.
Okay. Hugh Keevans, are you ready to try and go one better?
I am.
Good stuff. Your time starts now. No, it doesn't. You need to press the right button. Here we go. Who scored a hat-trick for Hibs against BSC Glasgow?
McNulty.
Who is the only non-premiership team left in the Scottish Cup?
Inverness Kelly.
What country does Scott Arfield represent?
Australia.
What term was used to describe the rivalry between Dundee United and Aberdeen in the 80s?
New firm.
Which Rangers player is currently on loan at St Johnstone?
Pass.
Who has the most premiership clean sheets apart from McGregor and Forster?
Joe Lewis.
Where did John Souter start his career?
Dundee United.
And name any one of the four man-made objects that appear on the Hibs badge quickly.
Hammer.
Okay. That's the guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Kevin, what do you think?
Oh, I may have picked me the one, I think.
I thought they were easy tonight, Gordon.
I think it was close. Do you think they were easy?
Yeah, I did too, yeah.
Producer Andy's going easy on you at the start of a new week. Who scored a hat-trick for Hibs against BSC? It was Mark McNulty, 1-0 Keevans. Who's the only non-premiership team left in the Scottish Cup? Inverness. You both got it, 2-1 Keevans. Equaliser, Kevin, in Bargeddy though. Canada.
Canada.
Oh, Canada, not Australia. 2-2 after 3 questions. Good game. What term was used to describe the rivalry between Dundee United and Aberdeen in the 80s? It was New Firm. You both got it, so you're still level. Which Rangers player is currently on loan at St Johnstone?
Holt.
Jason Holt. See. Who has the most premiership clean sheets outside of Alan McGregor and Fraser Forster? Both of you went for Joe Lewis, inexplicably overlooking the goalkeeper who's in third place in the league, I must say. Don't worry, I'm not overly offended. Mark Gillespie, Motherwell keeper, has got 10.
Sorry, Mark.
Where did John Souter start his career? Dundee United. You both got it, so you're level at this point, Kevin, and you've run out of questions. So Hugh Keevans has to hope there's a hammer on the Hibs badge. There is a harp, a castle, a football, and a ship. No hammer. So we're going to the tiebreaker.
It's Trini Lopez. If I had a hammer.
For all, good game. I like that, Kevin. The situation is like this. I'm going to read the tiebreaker question. I'll get Hugh Keevans to write his answer down, and I'll then invite you to give me your attempt, Kevin. Okay?
Okay, sure.
I want you to write this down quickly, not too much thinking about it. What year were Hearts formed? Write it down, Hugh. You're taking a bit of a guess, I think. In what year were Hearts formed? Quickly. Okay, he's shown me his bit of paper. Kevin, what would your guess be?
1874.
Oh. Kevin's gone 1874. Hugh Keevans has gone 1847. Kevin has got it right on the nose.
Oh, well,
1874. Love
it.
He said 1847.
He's gone way back.
Kevin, did you know that? Did you know it, or was it a guess? Surely not a guess.
I thought it was 1873, and then the last minute changed my mind.
Brilliant. Right on the nose. Well done, Kevin. The signed ball is on its way to Bargeddy as we speak. Well done.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Good. Like that. Listen, if you get a tiebreaker on the nose, you've done well. That although is there massive. Is a bit of knowledge there. Some people maybe did know that, so there we go. Well done, Kevin.
Jumped in with Scott Arfield. Of course it's Canada.
Yeah. You'll take...
Why didn't that Canadian in there tell me?
You'll take it gracefully.
Thank
as
God
always,
you called
though.
Him a Canadian.
Were you worried there when he started that? Yeah, no. I had my heart in my mouth. I thought this was his last ever show. A long, distinguished career. It had all gone up in smoke because he was going to abuse the Canadian producer. But he's fine. He's fine. He's still here. He's still with us, as I'm sure you will all be delighted to know. Right, let's hear a bit from Brian Rice. But this isn't exclusive to Hamilton. I'm wondering if you were out at a game at the weekend. I wonder what you made of the conditions. Do we need to do a bit more to take wind into account? Because we very rarely, you know, we sometimes get safety concerns and all the rest of it, but we focus on waterlogged pitches. What about the impact that wind has on a game of football? Were you at one at the weekend? And if you were, was it ruined? Or do we just need to toughen up and get on with it? Let us know what you think, because Brian Rice says more needs to be done to stop games in extremely windy conditions. He says the BSC Glasgow Hibs game was a farce because of the weather, and that matches just turned into a lottery.
I can't believe in this day and age that we've got goal line technology, we've got VAR, we've got all these tools to improve the game, and we've not got a win meet. I've said it now for 15 years. The worst conditions you can ever play in is the wind. I think it's been proven. You know, there must be a wind meter. There must be something we can use, because it just destroys the game. Players don't like it, fans will not come out in it, the game's a lottery. You know, with all this technology we've got, surely somebody, you know, there must be a win meter. We must come up with something. Stop games going over and making it a lottery. I was at the Hibs game yesterday.
Yeah.
Complete farce.
Nuts.
Complete farce, you know. Fair play to the two teams trying to make a go at it and trying their very best, and for the fans for turning up in horrendous conditions. I hold my hands up to them. Fantastic. Falkirk Hearts, Saturday night, same. you know, and Clyde Celtic, I believe, was the same as well. But, you know, in this day and age, surely we can come up with something.
I think it's a point.
Absolutely.
I think if you go to a ground and it's waterlogged, that's perfectly obvious. You can see that for yourself. If you go to the ground and it's snowbound, you can see that for yourself. If the areas leading up to the ground are icy or covered in snow, that could put a game off because it's a danger to the spectators. But with the wind, we had Fraser Wishart at St Mirren on Saturday and we could barely hear him above the wind. And when you look at television...
That's okay, people don't mind that.
When you see the television pictures of corner flags, horizontal corner flags, how are players supposed to play in this? So I think that Brian Rice has a point there, because as people keep on saying, we're approaching the business end of the season. Storm Ciara hasn't left us yet. Big stakes, big points at stake. And we, you know, Alec, if the wind has an effect on the game, then why should it? Why should it start in the first place?
I think he makes a very valid point. I often say to Gordon and yourselves in the studio, it's one of the conditions that I used to hate playing in, because you can't judge the flight of the ball because it catches the wind or it overruns. It's actually quite dangerous as well, Hugh. And I'm looking at the fixture list at the moment. If you take Rangers as an example, the 8th of March is the next game they play. And every week, midweek between now and then, has fixtures, Hugh. The problem you have congestion as well. So I'm not exactly sure. And then you have, there'll be a, probably after the Braga game, one of the fixtures will be moved as well. So that'll probably go into that midweek. So it's trying to reschedule these games. We play so much football, but I take his point, totally on board, and he's absolutely right.
But if the wind makes the match unplayable, as flooding makes it unplayable, or snow, then why should the wind be treated any differently?
I mean, I think, Alex, we fall into the habit of thinking, you know, well, what's the big deal? Just don't play long, high balls. But there's more to it than that. You could see the Hearts game in particular. Even trying to move the ball from side to side, the ball was either blowing, you know, way out of the pitch or staying in the pitch when it otherwise wouldn't. And it just, lottery probably is a fair word for it.
Gordon, we're highlighting the longer ball, you know, whether it holds up and things. But even the shorter balls as well impacts it. It's not ideal at all. I commend the players, because having played in it myself, it's not ideal, you know, because whatever you believe is, it is a bit of a leveler, Hugh, in terms of ability, because you can't get the ball down at times and it's very difficult, you know, cross balls, the whole shooting match. So it may well be something they may well look at, because I think safety as well, without doubt, it definitely impacts that also.
And if you talk about spectators as well, I mean, we've looked at some spectacular structural damage down south today, where they appear to be having it even worse than we are here. The safety of the fans has to be taken into account as well.
Don't forget, the number you need to get in touch tonight is 01419511025. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at ClydeSSB as well. I think we've got Joan Paisley on the line. You seem to disappear there. Just waiting to see if we can get Joe on the line at the moment. I think we can. Yes, let's speak to Joe in Paisley. Hi, Joe, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, mate. Yourself?
Not too bad at all. What's on your mind tonight?
I was just talking about the famous Archie McPherson, about the wind and everything else. The famous Archie McPherson lines was, it was a Celtic against Inter Milan, and the ground was perfect, right? And he turned around and said, it'll give both the teams an advantage. So then, of course, with the wind, it gives both the team a disadvantage. And I understand about safety and everything, but that was one thing that I always remember. It was one of the favourite lines from him. Gives both the team an advantage and then gives both the team a disadvantage.
Yeah, I think that is pretty true. And if we even, what was it, Peterhead Forfar was called off after half an hour due to high winds. It would have been interesting to know if were those winds worse than what we had some of the other games. I don't know, because you can't be more than one place at once.
I read Jim McAnally this morning saying that he knew the game would never last the course, and he knew the day before the game would never last the course. I just think
it begs the question, Hugh, why make people travel all that way up there?
I just think we are unaccustomed to the idea of calling a game off because of wind. But if you can't play football in it, what's the point in having a football match?
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that as well. I agree with that. But then the whole point is it's one of those ones is safety as well, and what you did mention, and it should be looked at as wind. But I just thought about Archie McPherson there when he actually did make that statement.
I'll be delighted.
But with the football.
I'll be delighted to tell Archie that you remembered his words, because he and I speak frequently, and Archie will be delighted that you've remembered his words.
But Joe, I wonder if that's maybe just missing the point a bit, because no one's pretending that it does favour one team or the other. That's not what this is about. We're not trying to cut one team slack over another. It's really just about ruining the spectacle. And I know it's the same for both teams, but is that the point?
Yes, that's the whole point. One of the things is, if you're going to that game as a spectator, You're getting sure dealt with. I mean, if you watch the rugby during the Scotland game, and having to hold the ball and everything else when they're trying to do a kick and all that stuff. So at the same point with the football, it's potluck really at the end of the day, and keeping the ball on the ground, but using artificial pitch at the same time, the ball's going to run across it. At any point, as soon as you get a gust of wind. So that's why I was saying that. It was like one of those ones, the grass is not going to hold it, it's just going to keep moving. So as I said, it's potluck. He's right in what he said, it's potluck in what's happening in that game.
Brian Rice, having been the man who brought it up, Brian Rice should go and speak to Ronnie McDonald at Hamilton Accies and say, listen, can you not go to the next SPFL or SFA meeting and suggest that we should be looking at wind as a hazard, an impediment to playing football? As I said earlier on, nothing will ever change unless you do something about it.
Let's speak to Alistair in Corker Hill. Hi, Alistair.
Hi, good evening, Gordon, Alec, and you. I totally agree with what Brian Rice says, chaps. It's basically down to human life and limbs being at risk of the grounds have been, because remember the Celtic Caledonian Thistle game was cancelled because something fell off parkhead, but the Cult of Rangers Killy games, oddly enough, cancelled with the same thing, and it happened at a Rangers European game that something came off one of the stands to hold it back. People's life and limbs, as well as the spectators, we want to see good football promoted. I know it's going to be, as Alex says, a possible clog up, but if games don't go ahead through this, it's unfortunate, but at the same time I think it does seriously need to be looked at.
Two separate things, to be fair, Hugh, because games will be called off if they're not safe. Yeah. Still, I think Brian Rice is coming at it more from a footballing perspective.
Sure.
So, you know, they are slightly separate, but Alistair is onto something as well.
Yeah, Alistair, I was telling the young whippersnappers in here last Saturday about that Inverness Cali Thistle game, because of course that was the one where Cali went ballistic and Celtic were atrocious, and it couldn't take place on a Saturday because part of the roof was in danger of being removed at Celtic Park, so they played it on the Wednesday night. Brian Rice is thinking, how do you play football? Brian Rice, as a footballer himself, when he was known as Chipper, was one of the loveliest footballers you would see, and he doesn't like it when he sees the beautiful game distorted by the wind. But you have raised a point as well, Alistair, that you also have to take into account the safety of those who are at the game. So, as I say, nothing will happen unless Brian Rice goes to Ronnie McDonald or chairmen get together, owners get together and say, right, what are we going to do about this?
What about your own team at the weekend, Alistair?
Ah, well, they get through, Gordon. I wasn't there on the Saturday. It was at a junior game, but I was one each when I left the house. I was mighty relieved to see they ended up winning 4-1.
How did the juniors cope with the wind?
It was very much across the way, Hugh. It was at the Benbird, Kilwinning Rangers game on Saturday, and it very much went across the park. Oh. But they coped with it not too bad, despite the conditions, and at least try to play football. Kilwinning hounded the bends down and more or less gritted out the result and played better to the conditions, I suppose.
Are they still at Tinto Park, the bends?
It's New Tinto Park across from Asda. They built one where the old cleansing ground used to be.
I remember it well,
and, the back of the other houses. And they've settled in quite well there. They're the top flight for the first time since the first season. But we're up against a battle to try and stay up. But it was a bonus getting there, so just enjoy whatever football happens between now and then.
Good man.
Well done. That was Alistair and Corker Hill. Hugh, Rangers have issued a statement this evening. Is very long, so I will just try and pick out the highlights if you like. It says, now police have charged an individual with racially abusing Alfredo Morelos at the Old Firm game on 29th December. It's necessary to state again, racist abuse in any form must never be condoned or dismissed. They want to make it clear that the Rangers have a duty of care not to say anything that might compromise a live Police Scotland investigation. Quite a number of paragraphs follow that, though. I would say mostly the gist of it is unhappy with the media who have dismissed or trivialised abusive behaviour, as too many outlets, journalists and pundits have done so in this instance. Perhaps there might be a bout of contrition, and one or two may feel a pang of guilt. The evidence some of them so loudly demanded is there in the form of this charge. It goes on to say that, you know, Alfredo Morelos has been described as a waster, a cheat, an angry brat, and one columnist or pundit wrote that if you can't take the vitriol, you're in the wrong city. So this has been aimed at members of the media, Hugh, without naming them. I think that column was in reference to, was it Davy Provins' column Sunday, yesterday? If you scroll further down, it says, especially vulgar in this manner, in which claims of abuse, racist and sectarian, have been dismissed in some quarters, BBC Scotland in particular, where the overall situation has been mocked amid outrageous claims Rangers were behind the leaking of certain stories. None of this shows our media and country in a good light. So I don't know if any of it's aimed at you, and people at Rangers are listening, they are more than welcome to phone in and tell us what we've done wrong. It seems it's been aimed elsewhere.
Yeah.
But
I think we all know who the other journalist is, a television pundit who demanded evidence of
You can see his name, it's all right.
Michael Stewart, who demanded evidence of a racist chant being aimed at Alfredo Morelos. Rangers are fighting their corner here. Let me say in passing, Davy Provan is an old friend of mine and not a racist bone in his body. But we have a problem with it. It was, let's not forget, a Rangers supporter who, of 15 years of age, who aimed abuse at Shea Logan. And Shea Logan went to the family and that was sorted out. And the young man is chastened and will be better for having had the error of his ways pointed out to him. In general terms, and with no direct reference to any particular incident, racism in football is abhorrent.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, Alex. We can all agree with that. If there is a debate between Rangers and columnists of a newspaper, a debate between Rangers and BBC Scotland, not really for us to get in the middle of. They may well, at some point in the future or the past, have issues with us as well, which they are more than welcome to phone in and discuss and whatever. But I think as things stand, I don't really know how we get in the middle of a dispute between one of our biggest clubs and other media outlets.
No, I think we have to leave that on. I think Rangers are within their rights, you, to call out certain people on the back of particular columns that they're not happy with, or what they think is unacceptable. You know, with Michael talking about you know, give us evidence, then Davey was talking about he's in the wrong city, I would say. But for me, that was a step too far as well, Hugh, purely for the point of view is it almost seemed as if abuse was acceptable, whereas, you know, the young man's came from a different country to live here and he shouldn't have to put away any abuse.
Okay, let's leave that there. We are now 4.5 minutes late for this. Producer Andy, Seven Kittens next door. We've got a full time teaser coming next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Getting you full compensation is their goal. Talk to Thompson's.com.
It's that time of the night. Well, it's a bit later than usual, but I'm sure two men of your intellect will be able to cope
on
no problem at all with the reduced time frame. We're looking for your answers on tonight's full-time teaser. Now, just a bit of housekeeping. If you want to send your questions in, you want to hear it on the show, the address you need is fulltime@clyde1.com. That's fulltime@clyde1.com. And your question, like Mikey's tonight, could be used on the show. So thank you to Mikey for sending this in. He is looking for 8 players who've scored a winner in a major cup final in Scotland since 2000 and have been capped by their country. So 8 players have scored a winner in a major cup final in Scotland since 2000 and have been capped by their country. So you don't need me to tell you, but just in case there's any doubt, as in a 1-0, if you score the one, that's the winner. If it was 2-2 and you scored the goal to make it 3-2, that's a winner. So forget guys that have just scored.
All right.
You need to think specifically.
Winner. Ferguson or Lovenkrantz?
Which one?
I'm going to go away Lovenkrantz.
Yes.
And obviously been capped.
He's done it twice.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's one of the 8. Well done.
Henrik Larsson must be in there somewhere.
The 2003 League Cup final and the 2002 Scottish Cup final. Do you know Hugh Keevans? He is not. I mean, he scored in finals, but never the winner, if that makes sense.
John Hartson.
He's going through an old tried and tested.
Chris Sutton?
No.
Chris Commons?
No.
Darren O'Dea?
Chris Boyd?
Darren O'Dea, no. Chris Boyd, yes. The winner in the 2008 Scottish Cup final against Queen of the South in a 3-2 win. 18 caps for Scotland.
Ji Sung Young?
No. So it can be Scottish Cup or League Cup, just a major cup final.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just repeat it once more and we'll leave
Stevie
it out
Thompson?
There. No, we'll leave it out there for the listeners. Can you name 8 players who've scored a winner? So it has to be a winner in a major cup final in Scotland since 2000, and they've been capped by their country. So guys like Peter Lovenkrantz, he's done it twice and he's been capped by Denmark. Chris Boyd, 2008 Scottish Cup final, capped by Scotland.
Chris Commons?
No, he said that already. Oh dear, we'll leave it there. Bit of news coming out of Fir Park this afternoon, Hugh. And that's it. Motherwell have now cleared all of their outstanding external debt.
Yeah.
Now, a final payment of around £80,000 has been made to 5 individuals who invested in the club back in November, and the balance has been settled following the transfer of James Scott to Hull at the end of the window. You remember that? It was a fee of around £1.5 million. So over £2 million of debt has been cleared in 3 years. They now operate with zero external debt, and for the first time in 40 years, I think it is, will work with no fixed or floating charges over Fir Park Stadium to external parties.
Well, when James Scott was sold and people said, why are you doing that? That's why you're doing it, to give the club stability, security. And James Scott, with 30 odd games played for Motherwell, his transfer was a godsend. And there might be more to come. David Turnbull, who could have gone to Celtic for £3 million, is now winning his fight to regain full fitness. And he could be the next big money transfer. But well done to all concerned, because I always go back to the day when 17 people lost their jobs in one day at Fir Park, when John Boyle lost £10 million because of the way Motherwell were run at that particular time. And now they understand the need to live within their means and occasionally to sell a player for big money, because that's part of the deal.
Yeah, I mean, Chief Executive Alan Burrows on Twitter today, Alex, saying, calling it a momentous day for the club and thanking the contributions of the likes of Les Hutchison and John Boyle for the way they structured the repayment plan and writing off part of the debt as well. So I think it's a bit of a lesson, and eventually, because I don't think anyone would try and pretend that they're clearly, you know, that there weren't massive mistakes made in the past and people suffered as a result of it, but maybe a lesson in sort of learning from those mistakes and getting yourself to a really sustainable level.
Yeah, I have to commend them and the job they've done. I think when you look at the board, Alan Burrow's been a big part of that as well. Gordon started at the bottom, one of these forward thinking guys, good media team, brilliant on the pitch. It's a success story all the while, and they'll be looking to try and get third spot. And you know, when you look at the stuff they're doing at the academy, so it's a perfect model. Works brilliantly for them.
On the pitch then, still in the cup, but with a bit of work to be done. It was a draw between St Mirren and Motherwell on Saturday, 1-1 in Paisley. They'll have to dance again next Tuesday night, I believe. Yep. Hopefully the weather improves. Let's hear from both managers.
I think it was a fair result, yeah. You know, I was really pleased with how the players went about it in the first half, and I thought we slightly shaded the first half in terms of quality and chances created. And you're looking forward to the second half with the elements behind you. But I don't think we utilised the wind well enough. We didn't get the ball wide enough to get crosses in the box. We certainly didn't work the goalkeeper enough either. So in the grand scheme of things, I don't think neither myself nor Stephen could sit here and honestly say we deserve to win it. I think a draw was probably fair. Over the whole piece, a draw is definitely fair. I would have liked to see the penalty back again. I think we've got a serious claim for a penalty in the first half. Alex Jakubiak gets a great attempt on goal. Gillespie makes a very good save. And then from the follow-up, Sam Foley has a shot. Looks like it's hit the midfielder's hands. Straight after that, Hodds is trying to put a ball in the box. Again, it's stopped by the Motherwell defender's hands. So yeah, I think that's one. If that kind of decision goes for you, then you come in at half time level pegging with the wind behind you, to go and try and win it. But for me, it looked as if the arms aren't in that natural position that they talk about.
That one, there will be a bit of debate over, Hugh, because this debate about natural position and seeing it back, of course, once the ball hits your arm, it'll then move. So you're trying to slow it right down and see, you know, was the arm already out?
It's so difficult, Gordon.
So this hit Peter Hartley. What would you go for? Penalty or not?
No.
Oh, okay.
I thought because of the proximity of the cross as well, it was so close to him, I don't think he's got time to react. I think his arms were in, well, his elbow was in. So for me, it wasn't a penalty either.
Okay, that was Jim Goodwin. Let's hear Stephen Robinson's take.
Had you been out there in the wind and rain, you'd have struggled to pass the ball. We tried to. We still tried to play our game. We created a lot of chances, and a draw is probably a fair result in the end. They had a couple of chances as well. But second half, we were better. We did try and get ownership of the game and play. It was difficult. The conditions were so difficult for the players, but they showed a great character, dug in, and I'm delighted with them that they've you know, we're still in the hut. We'll be back up for a park in another week, and we go confident with them.
Did you have to adapt the game plan at half time to sort of deal with the wind as it picked up a bit?
Yeah, it picked up again in the second half, to be fair. So we weren't. It was, you know, I thought first half we were decent, but second half I thought we actually played better when we had the wind against us and we passed the ball a little bit more. Mark O'Hara's a great chance to win it for us. Liam Donnelly's a great chance. Their goal's a deflection, so we're a wee bit disappointed with that. I thought we could have done better for that, but to be still in the hat, back to Fir Park next week, we'd have taken that. With the last 20 minutes with the wind swirling and balls going into our box, you know, both teams kept all their forward players on trying to win it, so we've got to be the happier of the two sides.
And Scottish football throws up these things from time to time. St Mirren and Motherwell. Motherwell and St Mirren will now play each other three times in the space of 10 days because they played on Saturday. They will meet again in the league at Fir Park this Saturday and then Tuesday night at Fir Park in the cup replay.
It's a nightmare, isn't it?
I never think any good comes of that, really. But again, Stephen Robinson talking about players' inability to pass the ball to each other because of the wind. If Brian Rice is listening, he'll be saying, "I told you so, I told you so." But I think both managers were in agreement that at the end of the day, all things considered, including the weather, a draw was a fair result, and they'll just have to go on with their triple header.
And it's the two replays, if you like, that are scheduled to meet each other, Alex.
Yes, so that's correct.
The incentive for Motherwell and St Mirren is that they would also have a home tie in the next round if they were to get through, and that would be against Kilmarnock or Aberdeen.
And you would think either one of them would fancy their chances, particularly at home, Gordon, and they will be desperate to get into that next round, that's for sure. And because it brings a wee bit of kudos, it gets some more finances through the door as well, and it gets you going in the right direction. And I look forward to them.
Yeah, so that replay is down for Tuesday the 18th, I think it is. Yes, Tuesday the 18th of February. Lots of two games to come before that. So St Mirren away to Livy midweek, away to Motherwell the following Saturday, then away to Motherwell again just a couple of days later. So we'll keep an eye out on those games as they draw ever closer. What about tonight's teaser, though? The question is this: can you name eight players? We're only looking for eight. You're getting off lightly. Who have scored a winner in a major cup final in Scotland since 2000 and been capped by their country? So you've got Peter Lovenkrantz so far. He did it in the 02 Scottish Cup final, the 03 League Cup final, and he's been capped by Denmark. Chris Boyd, the 08 Scottish Cup final, he's been capped by Scotland.
Stevie May.
No.
Ryan Christie.
Yes, do you remember when?
Would have been the last couple of years.
Yes, who was it against?
Hearts.
No. Aberdeen.
Aberdeen, yeah.
Tom Rogic.
The 2018 League Cup final against Aberdeen. Yeah, you remember that one, Hugh. That was a bit easier to remember because of the significance attached.
Yeah, that was a treble winning goal.
2017 Scottish Cup final. He's got 47 caps for Australia, so he definitely counts.
Here's one. Craig Bryson.
No.
No.
I'm going to go for Jelovic.
Yes, the 2011 League Cup final against Celtic, and he's been capped by Croatia. We'll leave it there. You have 1, 2, 3 to get. We'll try and get them next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. They play to win every time. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Alex Ray and Hugh Keevans are still here. They've not fallen out over tonight's full time teaser. There is still time for that though. Mikey, big thank you to Mikey for sending the question in. He wants to know if you can name the eight players who have scored a winner in a major cup final in Scotland since 2000 and been capped by their country. So guys like Peter Lovenkrantz, Chris Boyd, Tom Rogic, Nikica Jelovic, Ryan Christie. I think you've got 3 to get
Kenny Miller.
Yep, 2010 League Cup final against St Mirren, and just the 69 caps for Scotland. Okay,
was that game as well?
Only 2 to go, so I think we can leave it there. You've got plenty of time to get them. Let's take a call from Craig, who is a Rangers fan on the line. Hi Craig.
Hi gents, how you doing?
Good, Craig.
Actually, no, I think I do know one of the...
No, don't you dare.
Don't tell us.
I would say it, because, you know, I'll leave the two brains of Britain to work it out.
Yes.
No, I think the game at the weekend there, you know, it was partially buoyed by conditions, but I think it's getting to a point now for me with Rangers where, well, now, 7-8 games back, I've not seen a really good performance yet. Saturday was passable, conditions and all fine, but again, it was too slow at the gates. And when you're going, I mean, particularly going to Rugby Park on Wednesday, that's going to be tough. And Kilmarnock will be, you know, they'll be looking to get a result. They'll fancy it. And we have to go and absolutely make sure that we're up for it. The next round of the Cup as well against Hearts. And don't get me wrong, you know, I know a few fans have come on and was concerned about Hearts. I don't fear playing Hearts. I don't think Rangers or Steven Gerrard will fear going to Tynecastle. I think they'll probably relish the opportunity to go and vanquish some of those demons for the last couple of games. I want to make a point as well, because on Saturday and even today with Brian Rice, it was mentioned about the penalty. Rangers did get away with one. There's no question they got away with one. It was a penalty. But there was a Celtic fan come on Saturday who had a right go at the referee and suggested there was almost some sort of bias. Brian Rice also made the same implication that there was some sort of favouritism towards the Old Firm. You know, for me, at the end of the day, the referees in this country are massively inconsistent. I mean, God knows we lost the Cup final partially due to a big decision going against us. But these things happen in this country, and until such time as VAR comes in or does an improvement with the refs, it's going to be a continuous team. Every team feels it. So the likes of Brian Rice and McInnes as well at the weekend, you know, having the goal they did as if, you know, it's exclusive, if it's Rangers and Celtic, it's bigger. It's not. It happens to everybody.
Yeah, I said that at the end of the Brian Rice clip, that you just can't say that. It's an allegation of favouritism when you can have inefficiency. The referee at Hamilton was inefficient. The referee at Pittodrie, when he denied at Aberdeen on Saturday, which should have been a penalty, was inefficient. But beyond that, you can't accuse them of anything else. And it's not peculiar to this country either. I mean, television now allows us to have a look at football from all over the place, and referee mistakes go on everywhere. But unfortunately, in this country, you cannot rid people of the notion that these things are done deliberately and for a specific purpose.
What about the footballing point, yeah, Craig makes, Alex? It's the end of Monday's show, so I think, you know, for the first time we can already think about Wednesday's fixtures, which are pretty close. Will Rangers need their best performance of 2020 to win at Kilmarnock? Yeah. I mean, is that possible, yeah, just given the type of venue it has been in the past for them?
Yeah, I think when you go back to this time last year, Gordon, I think Rangers lost after the winter break, lost in the last day of the season down there, so it's a difficult venue. I think they've won twice against Kilmarnock this year, so more favourable. But whatever way you look at it, it's always a hard game. If it was the opening game of the season, not a last minute or a last couple of minutes that Rangers scored to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, they know. Kilmarnock have actually started to turn the corner a little bit. A couple of decent results on the back of some terrible form of late. So they'll have to go down there. They'll have to match them physically, because the one thing about the Alec Dyer's mob, they will get wired in. They're on a little bit of run and they'll be looking to try and kind of turn Rangers over. So, but they will have to play better. Mm. That's for sure, Rangers.
Yeah, that's Craig won't speak on behalf of all Rangers fans. It never works like that. Mm. But I get the sense from the calls and from the tweets that they're still hoping that they'll get this really good, convincing performance, and then a sigh of relief if you're like, right, okay, we're back, we're over that wobble.
You know, if you look at the two of them going for this title, since the winter break ended, Celtic have been terrific. Scored a lot of goals, played a lot of good football, and Rangers have had their ups and downs. But you're ticking it off game by game. Rangers have to go to Kilmarnock, where they've come to grief. Is it another banana skin? Then Rangers play Livy at Ibrox, who have a habit of being a nuisance for Rangers and Celtic. Celtic Hearts, top versus bottom. Is it a shoe-in? Who knows until the game's played. And then they go to Aberdeen, where Aberdeen cannot buy a result, cannot score a goal. And the last time they played Celtic there, they were embarrassed. But it's easier for me to say it than it is for two lots of footballers to do it. So they're still ticking the games off one by one.
Yeah, Craig, a lot of the focus from your fellow Rangers fans, I've noticed, either on the show or on Twitter, has been about the new boy Yanis Hadji, just because he's come in maybe a bit quicker than people expected. People might say he had to, because Rangers needed that spark. Are you happy to just continue with him, even though Steven Gerrard's talking about, you know, sort of dampening down expectations and so on?
I think so. You know, of course Gerrard's going to be dampening expectations. I think that's right, because what you don't want to do is put too much pressure on the boy's shoulders. I mean, he's still young, you know, and he's still new to the game in this country. So there's certainly, I think the thing is as well, that we need to remember there's going to be bigger games for him to play in, and bigger pressure situations, you know, games against like Hamilton, you know, that's well and good and that's fine, and he played well, and even the game before that was the same. But it's when you come up against, you know, when you've got weighty venues like Pittodrie or Easter Road or Tynecastle, or even if he makes an appearance against Celtic, that's, for me, that's the true test. That's when you know what the player's made of. So, I mean, I've been happy with him so far, but I think, you know, I think at times you do need to take a step back. These players are new. Celtic are the same, obviously, with some of their players as well. So, when the big pressure games come, we'll see, because I've seen a lot of players come to Rangers and play well in these games, and then it comes to bigger games and they just don't produce.
I think when the minutes are ticking down at Ibrox, Rangers against Hibs last Wednesday, that's pressure, because Rangers know that Celtic are winning in a canter at Motherwell, and that was pressure. And Hadji brought the ball under control and had the presence of mind to score what was a really important goal, because had he not scored the winner, Rangers were bang in trouble.
Yeah, I think Craig's points were quite valid as well, in terms of they'd so much of the game last week, you know, wave after wave, plenty of possession. I think when you go to these grounds that Craig mentions there, I think more so it'll be more of a battle. I think you'll have to cope with that physical. Teams are a lot more aggressive at home. They try and take the game a bit more to Rangers as well. So
Yanis, have you met Alan Power?
Digger doesn't miss a target either. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be good. I think there's a lot of games. I think because they're coming thick and fast, you know, it gets people, they have to keep responding, because the pressure will mount, as you rightly say. Yeah.
Craig, thank you very much for your call. We will speak to you soon, no doubt. The games are coming thick and fast, as Alex quite rightly says, and the shows are coming thick and fast. This one is almost done. You're on the home straight, I would say, Hugh. You're looking for two more on the full time teaser. We've got a couple of minutes left, but we'll round it off a bit earlier than usual. Can you name eight players who have scored a winner in a major cup final in Scotland since 2000 and been capped by their country? So Peter Lovenkrantz, Chris Boyd, Tom Rogic, Kenny Miller, Nikica Jelovic, and Ryan Christie. You've got all but two.
Give him the two names I gave you, Alec.
All right, Nacho Novo.
No, he's not been capped by his country.
Was he in Spain? No.
They had quite a few to choose from.
Naismith?
No.
Scatchell?
No. Oof. The winning goal. So the
James Forrest?
The odd goal in a final note.
Struggling now, Shug.
Both Celtic.
Lustig?
Nope. One was the 05 Scottish Cup final against Dundee United. One was the 07 Scottish Cup final against Dunfermline.
05 Sutton?
No.
Bobo?
I thought you'd maybe remember the 07 one, because it's one of these great trivia answers. A guy who was clearly the highlight of what he did.
Dumbe.
Yes, well done.
Well done, Shock.
Jean-Joël Perrier Dumbe, capped by Cameroon and scored the winner. Last one.
If you built halfway.
He's an Englishman, this guy. So it's not Chris Sutton.
Yes.
He's got one England cap.
Tomo. Alan Thompson.
Yes.
Oh, brilliant. See, teamwork.
Teamwork indeed. Thank you very much to Hugh Keevans and to Alex Ray for joining me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard, looking back mostly on the Scottish Cup action from the weekend. Hugh said it a minute ago, and he tells the truth quite often. The big games are coming thick and fast. So, big games on Wednesday. We'll be back around the clubs on their media duty tomorrow and give you all the highlights from what the relevant managers had to say. Let me just finish off by thanking you, as always, for your calls and tweets. Much appreciated, as always. And to those of you who just listen quietly as well, we appreciate that also. In the meantime though, stay right there, because Callum Gallagher is up next, and he'll look after you for the rest of the night. He's going to be joined on the show by Anne-Marie. Callum Gallagher's up next.
Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Compensation you deserve. When there's been foul play, talk to Thompson's.com.